Monster Man, special episode, Journey to the West. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon backers, and in particular, the generosity of Patreon subscriber Explosion. If you'd like to be like Explosion and get your own special episode on a topic of your choosing, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman, and back at the $5 level. If you do that, in addition to your own episode, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the Deities and Demigods book for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition, and how to use religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. And it's going to have a lot of relevance in today's episode. So Explosion, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. The topic for today's episode is The Journey to the West. So Journey to the West is a classic of Chinese literature. It is a novel from the 16th century, and it's about this famous pilgrimage undertaken by a Chinese Buddhist monk to India to retrieve better copies or better versions of Buddhist holy texts. Except, like, it's kind of not. That is the historical event that provided the inspiration for the story, but the novel is a highly fantastical version of that, in which the monk was called Sanzong in the novel. And I apologize in advance for my pronunciation of Chinese names. I don't speak Chinese. I have done my best to look them up, but I'm just kind of going off, you know, how people pronounce them in TV shows and things, which, you know, might not necessarily be right, and I might not be doing it right, even if the original source is correct. So the monk is going on this pilgrimage, and he is guarded by a collection of supernatural ruffians and tricksters, most notably Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, who is one of the most recognizable characters in Chinese literature, Chinese mythology, and this is one of the most influential works of art, not just in Chinese literature, but like in the literature of East Asia generally. In fact, probably the most famous version of the story, at least here in the UK, is not Chinese, but Japanese, and is the like late 70s, early 1980s Japanese TV show, Monkey. You'll often find the story under the title Monkey, and that is because the most famous English translation is an abridged version translated by Arthur Whaley, and it was released under the title Monkey. That's the one that I've read, although I believe that there is a more up-to-date and more complete translation by Anthony Yu, which is kind of the standard for English language translations of the text. There have been some controversies about the Whaley abridgment of the novel. That is to say, like, apparently some people think that it focused largely on kind of like the adventure and comedy aspects of the story and left out a lot of the satire that would be, you know, more unfamiliar to contemporary audiences and therefore kind of missed some of the point of the book. I don't know enough to comment, but I will say this. We are, of course, looking for inspiration rather than accuracy in the source and in its translations and adaptations, right? We're looking for material for a fantasy role-playing game, and we're almost certainly not going to use anything that we find exactly as we find it. This is not a podcast about literary scholarship, it's a podcast about RPG monsters, so we are more interested in Journey to the West as a pan-Asian cultural phenomenon than as a specific work of literature. And one of the things that testifies to the book's enduring popularity and impact is that it has been adapted in a wide range of different ways. So I talked about the Japanese TV show Monkey, which is probably the best known version in the United Kingdom, but there are lots of other ones. So there's an Australian TV show, New Legends of Monkey, that's on Netflix here in the UK. There's a Korean TV show, A Korean Odyssey, that's on Netflix in the UK. There's another Korean TV show called Monkey Magic, I think. There's certainly a film adaptation called Monkey Magic. The US post-apocalyptic martial arts TV show Into the Badlands has a lot of inspiration taken from Journey to the West. The main character, Sunny, is clearly kind of meant to be Sun Wukong, even though, I mean, doesn't really have any of his traits. But Nick Frost's character is even called Zhu Baje, which is the name of another character from the novel. And probably, maybe most recognizably to an American audience, the first bits of the TV show Dragon Ball are based to some extent on the Journey to the West. So, as we can see, there is a long-standing and vibrant cultural tradition of taking the characters and situations of Journey to the West and adapting them into new contexts. Very interesting, because this is nominally a religious text. I mean, it's not, but it's a story grounded in a religious cultural background, which usually my assumption, my apparently incorrect assumption, would be that people are a little more resistant to that kind of like pop culture trivialization, but that's evidently not the case here. Now, I think that Journey to the West is an excellent source of inspiration for role-playing games. It is essentially about an adventuring party on a long quest. There's some stuff at the beginning that kind of gives you the background of the characters, but most of the book's length is taken up with their journey and the different encounters that they have along the way, and those are organized in a largely kind of picaresque structure. San Zhang, you may know him if you read Whaley's translation or watched an English language adaptation. He's called Tripitaka in those. He will get abducted by some kind of demons who want his magic powers, or believe that by eating him they can become immortal. That's one. Or, you know, he'll get into some other kind of scrape, and Monkey and his, you know, fellow adventurers, who I'll talk about in a moment, will have to rescue him. And there's kind of a runner where, I mean, the guy's a Buddhist monk, so he chides Wukong for the like violent and dishonest methods that he uses. And the, like, generally kind of, I mean, they're not a very pious crew. And indeed, Sun Wukong is controlled by this headband or circlet that he wears, which can be tightened by a spell that San Zhang knows. And so anyway, again, my pronunciation is probably terrible and I apologize. Let's start by talking about the player character crew, because they are, in a sense, monsters. So I've mentioned Sun Wukong, violent and cunning. He has previous with Heaven and was doing pretty well in the sort of tricking and bullying his way into the celestial hierarchy until he was finally defeated by, you know, Buddha, who trapped him under a mountain. He bears the title Great Sage, Equal of Heaven, which is pretty great. And he is full of magical tricks and strategies. He has a collection of magic items and powers. He's kind of the party leader of these roughnecks. He's probably the smartest one. Even though the story is not about him, he's kind of the protagonist, I guess. But if you were going to make him a player character, you'd want to tone him down. He kind of outclasses the other party members in a way that's a bit boring. Second, we've got Zhu Baje. Now, like Monkey, he once was a big deal in Heaven. He was a marshal of Heaven's armies. And he was chucked out of Heaven after... The summary that I just read uses the euphemism harassing, which is probably as good a word for it as any, the goddess of the moon. And he is an example of the way in which the characters are kind of used to impart moral lessons. So Zhu Baje has like pig features. He was reincarnated in the form of a pig, and he's kind of like a pig monster. And that, of course, represents his pig-like qualities. He's lustful, lazy, and gluttonous. And, you know, he's kind of a bumbling oaf, hoping that completing this mission will, you know, help him get back into Heaven's good graces. Zhu is often called Pigsy in English translations because he's a pig guy. The next member of the party, Sha Wujing, is often called Sandy, and he's kind of like a river monster. And he is another heavenly general. He was banished from Heaven for dropping and breaking a crystal goblet. I'm sorry if there's a lot of noise again. It's my neighbors doing DIY again. It's a Saturday. Sha Wujing is kind of the straight man of the party to some extent. Like, he's a little bit more of like a sad sack or an everyman than either Pigsy or Monkey. He's kind of nonplussed by their antics, but he is another monster looking for an opportunity to, you know, to restore his former glory. And finally, there's Yulong. Yulong is a dragon prince. Way back when we talked about dragons in Chinese literature, we talked about this idea of the dragon kings. He is the son of one of them. And the very first time we did dragons, comma, quotes, oriental, close quotes, we talked about the dragon pearls, which are these orbs associated with dragons in Chinese art. And he was banished from his father's, you know, watery kingdom for setting one of these things on fire. So the party are a ragtag band of goof-ups and misfits who have been given the task of transporting and protecting this wise and sincere, but maybe a little bit naive, holy man on a long journey. I mean, you can see where the kind of premise for this picaresque adventure comes from already. Yulong was going to be executed, I should say, but he was saved by the intervention of Guan Yin, who we've talked about in Deities and Demigods when we did Chinese mythology. Guan Yin is the Chinese version of Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion in Buddhism. So, having established our player character party, let's talk about antagonists. Now, most, although not all, of the antagonists in Journey to the West are demons of one kind or another. And I've picked out five, three of whom kind of come as a family unit, and at the end, I'll just give some very brief examples of other ones. Our first villain is Bai Gu Jing, the White Bone Demon. This is a monster that I think has attracted a lot of attention in recent years, largely because in the film Monkey King 2, she's played by Gong Li. Her main thing is that she is a shapeshifter, and she's used to reinforce the central point that the player characters are not considered trustworthy. So White Bone Demon keeps turning up in different forms to catch Sanzang, but only Wukong can tell that this is actually White Bone Demon. So Wukong detects Bai Gu Jing, and then because Wukong is a man of his fists, or I guess of his staff, he kills what appears to be like an innocent person. And because everyone knows that Wukong is kind of a rash, reckless, aggressive character, people believe that Wukong just went and did a murder. And by people, I also mean including Sanzang, who, you know, has to kind of learn that actually this was a demon in disguise. So this is a good example of an interesting use of a shape-shifting antagonist. You know, it's not the question of how do the player characters get fooled into believing that the shapeshifter is somebody else, but what happens when everybody else is fooled and the player characters aren't? And the player characters, as is the case in many D&D games, are the kind of people that sort of local villagers don't necessarily believe. My next selection is an antagonist called the Yellow Robe Demon, and I picked this guy not because he's that interesting in terms of his personal qualities. He is a demon ruler who wants to eat Sanzang, the Tang monk, and thereby become immortal. I'm amazed that he's not already immortal, being a demon, but whatever. But I picked him because he's another example of a character who fell from heaven. He was once a celestial being, and what happened is that he eloped. He ran away with this woman, and he became a demon, and she was reincarnated as a mortal. And actually, later from being reincarnated, before his encounter with Wukong, he abducts and marries her, even though she, having become an ordinary human, has no idea who he is. So in that sense, he makes a very interesting contrast to the other characters who, having been exiled from heaven, are kind of nonetheless working on heaven's behalf. Whereas he, having been exiled from heaven, is just like, well, cool, now I'm a demon, I have these powers, I can use them here in the mortal world to kind of throw my weight around. And he's a good example of an antagonist who sets up an interesting contrast to the protagonists. But I think that when most people think of the antagonists of the Journey to the West, they think of the Bull Demon King, the great sage who pacifies heaven. You're like, oh, that sounds familiar. Sun Wukong was the great sage, the equal of heaven. And that's right. That's because they're both effectively former members of the same gang. They're old associates. Indeed, they had become basically sworn brothers, right? They had this alliance. And, you know, now here is the former quote-unquote bad guy working on behalf of good, facing his old rival. In terms of his powers and abilities, the Bull Demon King is basically what you expect from a Demon King. He can turn into a big bull and charge at people. The fun thing about the Bull Demon King is the idea of the bad guy who is a former associate of a previously villainous character. Well, villainous. Wukong straddles that line between sympathetic rebel and flawed hero. And sympathetic rebels can associate with unsympathetic rebels, and flawed heroes can associate with unflawed heroes, and so that makes them interesting in that way. The other fun thing about the fight against the Bull Demon King is that there is a surprise guest appearance by Ne Jia. In fact, as I was kind of refreshing my memory of Journey to the West, I realized that I think Monkey may very well have been a source for the Chinese section of Deities and Demigods, except that, I mean, there's no Monkey King. I said at the time that it was the most glaring omission from that section. There's no Sun Wukong, and it just seems like something that you would have. So maybe not. The other nice thing about the Bull Demon King is that he has a whole domestic setup. And it's actually not necessarily, he's not necessarily the most important one. He's married to Princess Iron Fan, and she has a magic fan. And Princess Iron Fan is running a scam on the local humans. So she has this magic fan that she can use to put out the fires that are raging in the fiery mountains where Iron Fan and Bull Demon King live. But she could put them out permanently, but she doesn't. She puts them out temporarily. And basically, she's extorting worship from the humans who live there, right? That they have to basically keep paying her tribute, keep making offerings to her, or she'll let the fires return. And it is the fact that Wukong and his party need the magic fan that kind of motivates this conflict. This is really interesting because of the way in which it like explicitly frames the kind of Do U Des model of religious worship as a scam, you know, as a trick that Princess Iron Fan, who's not really a god, is playing on the humans, but in a way that doesn't really distinguish it from the non-trick version. Whether that's intentional or not, I don't know. Anyway, Princess Iron Fan is more than just a sidekick to Bull Demon King, because in fact there is some contention between them. She is not too happy that Bull Demon King also has a mistress, who is herself another character in this conflict. Oh, another name for this character is Rakshasa, which is, of course, a version of the word Rakshasa, which we talked about. I guess Rakshasi would be right, because it's a woman. But way back in the Rakshasa special, I talked about the idea that in its kind of predominantly Hindu use, Rakshasa is just like a generic term for a type of demon. That, you know, it's not this thing of like tiger-headed whatever is an invention of Dungeons and Dragons, as far as I can tell. Or it's certainly an invention of some later source. Rakshasa is a generic term for a kind of monster. So, finally, on my list of antagonists is the Red Boy. He's the son of Princess Iron Fan and the Bull Demon King, and he has fire powers. And one of the interesting things about him is that he can shoot out Samadhi fire, which is, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. I guess the idea is that this is like pure fire, right? It's the concept of fire. It is what in a New World of Darkness game you would call supernal fire, or like, it's like platonic fire. So water can't put it out, because that water is just mere physical water, and this is divine fire. That's interesting. I like it. I like the idea that you can have these kinds of like or versions of something, the concept of fire of which all earthly fires are merely reflections. So like my sword is made of or steel. It can cut through your material steel like nobody's business. It says that fire from the elemental plane of fire. I like that. Like most characters with fire powers, he's kind of arrogant and impetuous, and he even goes so far as to dare to challenge not only Sun Wukong, but actually Guan Yin herself, which ends about as well for him as you would expect. He is forced to submit to Guan Yin, but fortunately, of course, Guan Yin is compassionate. It's kind of her whole deal. So I like, again, the idea that there are, within this team of villains, you know, one thing I hate more than anything else is when a villain team either acts in complete lockstep, like they're not human beings at all and they don't have separate motivations, or has like cracks in it so obvious that an idiot could exploit them. But these guys seem like they have a really good dynamic. I think they're interesting. I mean, that maybe their cracks are a little obvious, but they have not dealt with an opponent on their level in a long time. So I think it works out. So those are merely five examples of the many, many, many supernatural antagonists that occur in Journey to the West. Just like looking down this list of characters, there's so many like evocative descriptions. So we've got the Demon King of Confusion, the Black Wind Demon, the Golden Horned King, the Immortal of Tiger Power, the Single-Horned Rhinoceros King, the Scorpion Demoness, the Six-Eared Macaque, the Python Demon, the Hundred-Eyed Demon Lord, the White Deer Spirit, the Jade Rabbit Spirit, and so on, right? It's just a lot of, like, this is a landscape that is very supernaturally active. Everywhere we go, there are spirits and demons, and that is kind of like, they're not that unusual necessarily, but they're all distinct. It's very rare that they run into a monster and they're like, oh, an orc, right? That you don't get that kind of thing. Most monsters are, narratively speaking, villains. This supernatural landscape will fit very easily into any kind of like high fantasy setting. If you're running in a lower fantasy setting, I suggest that you either designate this as like a weird high magic part of the map, or this is very much what another plane could be like. You know, if the higher planes are the lands of magic and mythology, then this seems like that. I mean, like hero questing in Glorantha. Now, I think, it's been 17 years since I last read Journey to the West, and for this special, I didn't sit down and read it from front to back, and even then, I was only reading that abridged Whaley translation. For our purposes, you know, I feel like Whaley selected the most adventure-gameable bits of the story, right? He kept in as many of the fights and tricks and monsters as he could, but I do think that this is a fantastically inspirational example of a fantasy picaresque that is similar to, but importantly different from, the same traditions in European and American literature. But also, there's umpty million film adaptations. Some of them are quite good. The TV series had a whole episode about how Monkey went to a town that was all about fractions. I'm not sure what that was about, but it was just about like kids doing their math homework. So I think that they deviated quite a lot from the original text and just put these familiar characters in modern situations that would be familiar to the like intended audience of kids. And again, those are characters that you can do that with. These are mythical characters, I was going to say on the scale of like a King Arthur or a Robin Hood, but actually, Sun Wukong is probably a more important and recognizable figure in world mythology than King Arthur. I mean, he's one of the most recognizable mythical characters there is. So those things have tremendous resonance, but at the same time, I don't know that you would necessarily adapt these specific demons. What I think Journey to the West does that's super effective is that it has a relatively narrow premise. More or less, not all, but many of the episodes in the picaresque are essentially the same. Xuanzang, the historical character is called Xuanzang. Tang Sanzang arrives in a place, there is a monster, he gets into a scrape, and, you know, sometimes that's caused by the, like, base urges of his companions, sometimes it's because just, hey, there's demons everywhere, and then Sun Wukong and, you know, plus or minus the rest of the party have to kind of figure it out. It's a very simple formula, and yet it is not, it doesn't feel repetitive because, well, sometimes it feels a little bit repetitive. Anyway, it's a great example of how to get a wide variety of different encounters out of essentially the same premise by varying the parameters of the situation and introducing small but distinct complications that separate the different characters. There are very few classical works of literature that translate readily into a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. The Argosy would do, all the greatest heroes of the age are put onto this ship and they go from like island to island encountering weird creatures so that eventually their captain can receive a magical treasure. Okay, bingo. And Journey to the West is right up there. A party of reformed monsters must escort a holy man across a magical landscape to receive religious teachings, and then they have to go back. Even going to the historical Xuanzang, his pilgrimage was like a massive logistical and diplomatic undertaking that sent him across the borders of lots of different polities, through lots of different cultures, lots of different landscapes, and ultimately took him nearly 20 years, I think? Because it's not like he got to India, picked up a couple of books, and then turned around and walked back to China. And, you know, there's a whole religious diplomatic process behind it. Like, the historical Xuanzang actually, you know, makes a fantastic premise for a more grounded narrative campaign. So I really feel like there's a lot you can do with the basic premise of this and its like variations on its own formula, and that these characters, even to people outside the kind of region of primary Chinese cultural influence, like if I go on Netflix right now, I will find more than one film adaptation of this story, and some of them will even be pretty good. To us, these concepts are recognizable, and that means that you can play with them and make them mean things, and that they come ready loaded with that sense of recognition and an existing emotional weight. Like when we see Sun Wukong turn up, we think, like, ah, time for some Monkey King shenanigans. And that's great. You know, what more could you ask for? All right, Explosion, I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Just as a reminder, if you'd like to get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or, if you prefer, you can pledge at a lower level and get the rewards for that. Whichever one is right for you. Once again, I apologize for my, you know, at best intermittent Chinese pronunciation. You know, when I had months to do the Chinese mythology section, you know, I had more time to, like, consult people and look things up. You know, here I've just kind of had to do my best. If anyone who's more fluent than I am has some corrections and wants to leave in the comments, go right ahead. But I am sensible of my fault and just wanted to apologize for it. Okay, in our next episode of Monster Man, we're going to be returning to Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. And we're going to be looking at spiders. Lots of them. Well, four. Is four a lot? Four is a lot. On Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.